Hello, I'm Sam Clement, and welcome to the Picture House Podcast. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Picture House Cinema's very own Director of Programming, Carol Mackay. Hello, Carol.
Hello, Sam.
Is this a podcast debut?
It is.
Well, we are honoured to have you.
You should be.
And returning podcast, Picture House Cinema's programmer, Cody Entwistle.
Hello.
Double programming team. I'm very lucky.
We're taking over.
It is an honour to talk to you guys, because you guys know so much about films. You get to choose every single film that our customers see in the cinemas, and you're often quite busy watching movies and doing all that work. So thank you for coming to talk to us this week. For listeners who maybe don't know, what does a programmer actually do?
It's a myth that we just watch films.
It looks like you just watch films to me.
I wish that was the case. But no, between or everything that gets shown in a Picture House cinema, we will watch. There's a team of us, so we split it out between us. But as well as that, we do a lot of boring admin as well. We try, where possible, to show the right films in the right cinemas, in the right screens, at the right times. Whether we're successful at that or not depends, but that's what we try to do.
How does it feel when you get it right, Carol? You can see, you know, actually that was a good decision to book that movie. People are responding really well. It was maybe a bit of a gamble, but here we are.
It's really rewarding, actually. If you've matched the film to the cinema and all the stars align, it's very satisfying. I think all of the cinemas have got their own little quirks and their own personalities, which is why you have to have such a broad team covering off everything that's available. There's so much content now. You've just got to try and hone your way through all of the clutter and find something that people want to enjoy in big groups. Mm. So, yes, it's very rewarding when it works.
Nice. And what happens when it doesn't?
We have a very tough Monday where we try and fix the damage. And and yeah, we sort of patch the house, don't we, really, to fill the gaps and maybe get some feedback from the cinema who might be like, you know, there was a big event going on down the road. That's probably why that show is affected. But we just fine tune every day, really.
Nice. We're recording this at the beginning of February and cinemas are really busy in January. Is it the busiest time of the year, film-wise?
Yeah, the awards corridor, or what the industry called the awards corridor, is always like an amazing luge of movies. And this year's been particularly good, actually. Last year we only had one sort of breakout film, which was The Favourite. But this year we've sort of hopped from one big film to another. So we've gone from Little Women and Jojo onto 1917. And then we've hopped onto David Copperfield. And now we're onto The Lighthouse. And then we'll be onto Parasite. So that's been consistent. Hmm. And that's really great, because in the summer months, the product isn't always there for us to have that kind of momentum.
Hmm. Is it tough when you've got so many films, though?
Yeah, that's always the problem, is being able to show films for as long as you'd like to show them and to show the breadth of films that you'd like to show, because so many films do get cramped into this very short period. Yeah. That are films typically that would get awards recognition. So yeah, it's very tricky but very rewarding at the same point.
So January, I mean, you said, mentioned it, Carl, there were so many films that had come out. I thought it would be quite interesting just to see how Picture House Cinemas did across January and maybe look at our top five movies for the month.
Carol has mentioned most of them already.
Sorry!
So yeah, our top film in January was 1917, and that's still going strong for us as well. Little Women was our second biggest film in January.
Which actually opened in December.
Yeah, and just played throughout January really well. Jojo Rabbit in third. And then David Copperfield, even though it only had a week and a day, came in at number four in January. And then finally Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, was our fifth highest grossing film in January.
That's interesting. So those films, a lot of those films are December movies that carried forward. Did you predict that?
To a point, because Cats and Star Wars were together, it was like a big stone and a ripple effect. Everybody moved away from them. Mm. So everything else started to queue up behind those two. But we could see Cats probably wasn't going to hang around for as long as we thought. And we were able to address that. But I think 1917 will go up again, because it's just won 7 BAFTAs. So it's a compressed awards run this year. Mm. It's really short. And there's always one that just breaks I think 1917 and Little Women for us were the two that started to move away from the pack.
Do you see when something starts on that sort of awards run and gets that momentum behind it and, you know, it's gongs left, right and centre, does that actually make a difference to the box office?
It can be different for different films. There's some films where it doesn't seem to be that affected, whether they get award recognition or not, but then other films can benefit massively from it. I mean, we'll go on to talk about Parasite more as we go along, but that is absolutely going to benefit so much from the awards recognition that it's got so far and that it's continuing to have.
I think it's quite hard to predict when we're looking at it often so far in advance which one is going to be the one to sweep the awards. Did you have 1917 pegged as the eventual winner of this stuff?
It was always on our radar as a key title, and I think we prioritised, or certainly were more keen on it once we saw that canny showreel that they did about the sort of concept of it being in one take. But I think it's done a lot more than we anticipated, but from Pitchhouse's point of view, it was always a key title.
I think that's it. When we're looking at that season so far out, you kind of have some titles pegged as award films just because people involved in those films have won awards previously, and you have box office predicted separately. So 1917 being a British film about World War One with Sam Mendes directing always felt like it stood a very good chance. But I guess it's a little bit surprising that it has dominated awards so much.
So, Carol, you were also at the BAFTA award ceremony on Sunday night. What's that like?
It was pretty exciting, actually. It was an incredibly well-run event. I thought it would be really tedious with lots of sort of clap here and smile here, and it wasn't like that at all. It was like a really enjoyable show that kind of flew past. Actually, all the awards winners were very brief with their acceptance speeches. It was very starry. We were all in with all the talents. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was probably a little bit predictable on who won what. Would have been nice to have had a curveball on some of them, but yeah, it was incredibly impressive. And they were addressing the accusations of lack of diversity all through the entire broadcast, you know, and it was a sustainable awards as well. There was no plastic, and the meal that we had afterwards was vegan. So yeah, a lot of thought had gone into it, and I'm very lucky to go, and it was really, really enjoyable.
When you're there in the room, are you sort of keeping track of who's winning what? Because on TV and on social media, when you're following, it's very easy. Like, oh, 1917's on 5 now. Are you sort of going like, 1917 could sweep this award?
I did lose count with 1917, actually. I'd lost count on how many awards we'd had, but I hadn't lost count on who'd won them because it was mainly one film. So it just sort of really zips along. And the Albert Hall is a more compact space than you imagine it to be. And Jesse Buckley sang a song from
Wild Rose.
A beautifully sung. And then we had this Cirque du Soleil dance for Judy Garland, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which was really moving, actually, strangely, as this woman was sort of chucked about like no one's business. But it was just incredible.
Who was the most famous person you spotted?
Joaquin. Well, no, actually, I saw Rene and Rooney Mara and Todd Phillips and Dexter Fletcher and Taron Egerton and Quentin Tarantino and Al Pacino and Robert De Niro.
Oh, you've got a...
Back of Adam Driver's head.
Back of his head.
Back of his head.
Very recognisable.
And I could see Bong Joon-ho. Oh, I could just see Greta Gerwig and Florence Pugh.
You were in the thick of it.
I was in the thick of it, yeah. It's really fun.
No, it's interesting. Do you, like, overall, Cody, looking back at the results, was it predictable?
Yeah, I think in large part it was. That's not to say there wasn't some really deserved winners, which is always nice to see, because it does feel sometimes with awards that the ones that come later in the run feel like they're just copies of the other award ceremonies that have come before them. But no, it's good.
So that brings us on to this week's big new film. And this film has had so much hype. So Bong Joon-ho's film Parasite premiered in Cannes in May 2019. I think, listeners, you probably have heard of this film, hopefully, because it's been talked about at every award show. Bong Joon-ho, the director and co-writer, has been out and about talking about this picture. And it's finally coming to UK cinemas on the 7th of February. So it's in cinemas right now. How long has this film been on your radar programming team?
Since Cannes.
You were there at day one.
Well, I wasn't, but the team was. But obviously, Bong Joon-ho's movies we've shown in some way, shape or form for quite a long time. But I don't think any of us predicted that this one would break out in the way that it has. But I think it's great because now everyone can go back and look at all the other amazing movies that he's made in a relatively short career. But yeah, this was a key title for us. But the awards, well, it kind of got reinforced at Toronto, the sort of a momentum of this movie. But now it's just like a runaway train.
Often you hear those films that are really hyped sort of with the industry and those sort of festival bubbles, but this seems to actually, now it's opened in so many places across the world. In America, it's done so well. Cinema goers love this film.
Yeah.
It's great to see because you get excited about a film and you want audiences to get excited about it, but you're also mindful that some films can work great at festivals and then can struggle to find audiences when they get released. So if you see it doing well at multiple festivals and then when it's released in America or when it's released in Korea and places like that, it's great to have that level of confidence in a film, both as programmers and from the distributor who's releasing the film as well.
Bong Joon-ho's only made like 7 films over his sort of 20-year career, but his name is a big name, I think, with film fans, and now I think he's a big name with audiences sort of worldwide. The film sort of touches on similar things to what he's talked about in the past, sort of that class struggle. I think we see that in like Snowpiercer, but I think we should try and talk about the plot without spoiling it.
Yeah,
this
that's
is a
gonna
fun
be tough.
Challenge, right? So I think what we can say is it's about two families, the Kims and the Parks, and the Kims are a family, an impoverished family, who are all living in this sort of like damp basement setting. They're doing a really crappy job. They're assembling pizza boxes for a pizza delivery company. So you sort of see a sense of their character there. They're grifters. They're trying to sort of cheat the pizza box system at the beginning of the movie. They're leeching the Wi-Fi off their neighbours. Their flat is just below the surface of this sort of street. So you see the pavement above their little tiny window. Through circumstances, the eldest son gets a chance to become a tutor for a wealthy family, the Parks, and throughout the film they sort of see the Parks are a great opportunity for the family to go up in the world, quite literally out of their basement setting, and they, through various situations, sort of get the family into this nice big house with the Parks. I think that's a broad strokes kind of description of the plot. I think more interesting maybe is the tone of the film, because it's about something, it's about a very current issue, but it's also fun.
I think that's what I don't know whether it's a South Korean thing, but it's definitely something Bong Joon-ho's done before, where you get serious themes and this sort of outrageous black humour, borderline slapstick as well. I wonder if that's why it's taken as long for the West to catch up to him, because I remember the opening scenes of Memories of Murder and people were like, what is this? As they all sort of stomped around a crime scene and fell over and stuff like that. And it was, but he's done that in nearly all of his films, as far as I can recollect. And the Kims they're not quite as likable as you want them to be, because the Parks aren't as mean as you want them to be either. So I think it's an interesting drawing of the lines, isn't it? It's all so blurry from the very get-go.
The Bong Joon-ho's described the film as a comedy without clowns and a tragedy without villains.
Yeah.
And you can sort of see where both families are coming from. Kims are just very wealthy.
And they're quite nice.
Yeah.
But they do not nice things without thinking. And I think the Kims are sort of scammers to some extent, but they're not as opportunistic as they're first set out either. And then, of course, that's your first part of the film. And then, without giving anything away, it all just flips very dramatically.
It keeps you guessing throughout. And I got really settled into the beginning is sort of a long con type movie. You know, they're pulling off a heist, and that's quite fun. But I do like how Bong Joon-ho is very good at changing the gears on the film and the film becoming about something else completely different. How did you first react to the film, Code?
I thought it managed to do something that's so difficult in modern cinema of being an entertaining film that will appease a lot of people on a purely entertainment basis, but peppering itself with enough going on beneath the surface for it to linger, for you to read into it as you'd like to. So it appeals to audiences that just want to watch a film on a Friday night and switch off and eat some popcorn, or if you want to sit in a dark room on your own and watch this at 10 a.m. on a Monday morning and then live with it in your skin yourself, you can absolutely do that with it as well.
It's very cinematic. I think he's really, I mean, he was always, all of his films are cinematic, but this is and then some, isn't it? Mm. Because I think that house is like taking the front off a doll's house, and then you suddenly get all those layers, that upstairs, downstairs thing that he does, and it's so beautifully shot and lit. It's so cinematic. I think he's really, he's become very Hitchcockian as he's matured as a filmmaker. I thought that when I saw his film Mother, there was that colour palette, and the photography is just cinematic. And that's why I think Parasite is all the stars aligning, really. Great story, great acting, doing something different for most audiences, I would imagine. It's a bit like with Corriedo, you know, we'd watch all of his films and go, they were amazing, but it was only Shoplifters that found its way out. And this is what we've got with him, with Parasite, I think.
Similarly to, I guess, with Corriedo. Corriedo also won the Palme d'Or and then had that great festival response. And Bong Joon-ho's going on a sort of a similar trajectory. It feels even bigger
with it this.
And maybe I think because the film has those sort of genre trappings and it's funny, and you're right, Cody, it is a good Friday night movie. Yeah, I think because there are so many sort of twists and turns and the Hitchcock parallel is absolutely bang on, it's quite a good one to watch with a crowd to see how everyone else is responding. And when I saw it, I was lucky enough to see it in the cinema, and it was packed screening, and afterwards everybody had something to say. You know, little huddles of people all around the foyer and stuff, just like, oh my god. So I enjoyed that. Well, I really liked how he uses the space, and he's described this as his stairs movie, and Snowpiercer, the one that's set entirely on a train, is his corridor movie. So he's exploring these spaces and like building a story around it, because actually it kind of is a stairs movie, and upstairs downstairs plays a huge part. The fact that, you know, we see the Kims at the beginning of the film under the street level, and then this house is like beautifully elevated, and it's it's this amazing feat of design.
Are you trying to describe it as a twisted Downton Abbey?
It's a twisted Downton Abbey. I mean, I stand by that. but there's also these like little, because it is a domestic film. It's not like full of action scenes and fight scenes, but there are these like great set pieces that are so tense. There's a certain scene around making a bowl of noodle soup, which was a kind of a big takeaway for me. That was a standout scene.
I think that's what makes it so cinematic as well. Like, I couldn't imagine pausing it. I couldn't imagine looking away from the screen, because it just seeps into you. So if you get distracted in any sort of way, I think you'd lose something from the film.
I think that's a really good point. I think it's like when you listen to a really good album, you don't jump tracks, do you? You let it play from start to finish. And Bong's films are the same. Having just rewatched Memories of Murder recently, that film ratchets up tension. It was incredible, but it's so seamlessly done, and you start off thinking, what is all this? And then you can't stop. It will take you out of the moment.
I think because all of his characters are sort of like the everyman type, you know, so they're like a normal person, you know, just, and you who you can really relate to, but then they're thrust into this amazing situation, like, you know, there's an alien creature under the bridge in your thing, or, you know, you're this bumbling detective who's fallen across this like the South Korea's biggest serial murder case. I think he does a good job of having a very relatable set of characters, and also he's so good at casting. Like, once again we get to see Song Kang-ho, his like key collaborator, working with him. But every performance in this film is kind of flawless. Do you think it's, I don't know, like, it just feels like a great launchpad for all of those actors to, you know, take on the West being a big Hollywood film now.
Yeah, because I think when that South Korean, the directors sort of all burst out a few years ago, they were all kind of balled up into one pot, weren't they? And they were just seen as genre filmmakers. And I think Memories of Murder is a film like Zodiac. It's based on true events. It's obviously had a huge impact on him as a young man. So it isn't just a horror thriller film. There's something else going on that we've never been exposed to, because I never watched a lot of South Korean movies until these guys all hit at the same time. But I think they were all seen as doing the same thing, which is probably unfair.
Yeah, I guess it's very few, you know, it's really hard for a film to travel internationally, especially theatrically. And there just seems to be sort of one or two international directors who get championed and sort of pushed around to festivals. But I think it has sort of highlighted, South Korea is a really exciting place for filmmaking. Mm. And all of these other people who are working around Bong and this industry that's building up is great.
Because I looked at it earlier on, and sort of Park Chan-wook is probably the most prolific of the South Korean directors that got them with the Vengeance trilogy and stuff like that.
And that was extreme violence.
And then it was seen as extreme Asia and stuff. But they were amazing. People didn't make films like that.
No.
With that level of sort of artistry and violence, really, I suppose. And I've always wanted revenge films done properly. And they did.
So I guess, you know, there's so much on in cinemas at the moment, but why would you are the programmers, why would you say people should watch Parasite at the cinema?
I think, like we've said, it can tick boxes for whatever the audience wants to take from a film. So even though we've talked about it, try to go in knowing as little as possible and just go with the story.
But it's not like anything else out there, is it? I mean, it's just, if you, it's so beautiful to look at, and it's just so well crafted and well acted. Even if you got nothing else out of it, you should go and admire the craft of it, because it's astonishing and it's a refreshing watch. It's so different to everything else that's currently on release.
I think looking at the films it's up against in award season, for me it feels like a much more complete piece than so many of its sort of, you know, some of them are really good films as well, but the standard is set so high when you're in awards sort of land. And what I think is really nice this year is it isn't just getting the best international or best film not in the English language awards. At the Oscars, which haven't happened yet as we're recording, it's been nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including like production design, editing. And it's really great to see the Academy actually like, you know what? This is a film, we have to acknowledge the work, the crafts work that's gone into this. Because it's all there on screen, and it's so integral to the story and how you enjoy the film.
But it's so patiently made as well. It doesn't care if you're getting bored. And I think filmmakers, unfortunately, subconsciously, are always worrying about the person who's going to whip out the mobile phone after 10 minutes. And so therefore, possibly influences how they put their films together. This is like just seamless and patiently made, and I think that's when the sort of plot twists and turns happen. They're so impactful. I saw it with people literally like, oh, as something, because they weren't expecting it, and it really snuck up on them. It was great.
The nice thing about the sort of confidence that you say is I'd actually just happily watch the Long Con movie that we see at the beginning before the other sort of genres and things come into it. Or I'd happily, you know, watch where the film goes to in phase two or in phase three. You know, I can sort of see why they're now talking about making a TV series of this in the States. Bong Joon-ho has been tapped by cable networks to bring this I don't know if it's going to be set in America or if it's just going to be funded by Americans, but I think Adam McKay for Vice and that lark is collaborating with Bong Joon-ho on a Parasite TV series.
No way. Well, so, he did Succession though, didn't he?
Of course, yeah. Oh, I could see a Parasite Succession type of film. That'd be great. Okay, so I've just seen Parasite and I'm absolutely in love with it, but I've never seen any Bong Joon-ho films. Where should I go after Parasite?
You have to do Memories of Murder. Absolute favourite of his.
This is his second film,
Second film, yeah. And he was 33, 34. It's so accomplished. Again, well acted.
Song Kang-ho.
And I'd never seen a film put together like that. That opening 15 minutes, where you just think, what is going on? What are they doing? Because it's like slapstick almost. But it becomes so tense and desperate, and it's based on a true set of murders. And I think they found the real murderer in the last few months, which I'd read somewhere that Bong had found quite uncomfortable. Because I think it was a huge case in South Korea. Where
it was their biggest serial killer case ever.
Yeah. Well, they're such a kind of useless police force. So it's like the Keystone Cops trying to solve these terrible murders. I think his performance is extraordinary. So that's where I started. So I started at a very high bar.
Okay, that's good. Memories of Murder from Carol and for Cody?
I still really like The Host. It may seem a bit silly compared to what else he's made, but it's nice having just normal, bumbling characters in a monster movie.
I think they're, it's actually quite a good parallel, Parasite, again, because I think the family are sort of living on the streets. It sort of deals with inequality and poverty in that film, but the bad guys in that film are the corporations who have made this mutant that's living in a big river in Korea, and then it's this family who are affected by it. For me, I remember seeing that film at the cinema when it was first released, and it was just actually nice to see a big special effects movie from another country. I'd never seen a non-Hollywood sort of monster movie like that, and I think the visual effects still hold up today, that CGI sort of creature he's created for it. I think for me, I think the most readily accessible films are probably Snowpiercer, which is on various streaming platforms, and Okja. But yeah, The Host has got a sweet spot for me because it's the first one I saw, so would recommend tracking that down.
But Mother is amazing. Mother is an incredible sort of cinematic Hitchcockian, a terrible story. It's just and very sort of moving, and with an amazing performance by, was she in her 80s, 70s, 80s? I can't remember the actress's name, but she was like a big star in South Korea, and then he'd brought her in for this. It's a wonderful film.
I mean, the nice thing is, wherever you go, if Bong Joon-ho's name is on it, it's a pretty good film.
Yeah.
If not an amazing film. Right, okay, well, Parasite is out now, and look forward to seeing what everybody thinks about it. So a big thank you, Carol and Cody, for joining us today. If you had to say one film that you're looking forward to in 2020, what would you say? West Side Story, Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
The French Dispatch.
Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
With an incredible cast.
Insane cast.
Yeah, nice. Well, both of those will be on at Picture House down the line, but Parasite is on right now, so check those out. If you'd like to see Parasite, do head to our website, picturehouses.com. Follow us on Twitter at picturehouses for all the latest film goss. We might actually have a Parasite poster to give away, so check out the Twitter. And Bong Joon-ho signed it when he did his Q&A run recently, so we'll be giving that away on our Twitter feed. And yeah, a massive thank you to listening to the Picture House podcast. Do rate us on your podcast app of choice. And a big thank you to the lovely team at Number 8 London for recording us today, and to the team at Silk Factory for supporting the podcast. For more info on the Silk Factory, do check out their website at silkfactory.co. We'll be back soon.